The moratorium went into effect when?
Moratorium went into effect in March of 2016, and it was enacted to kind of take a step back and enable council and the community to have a discussion about how do we implement the policies of the Aspen Area Community Plan into the land use code so that development is actually delivering on the community's goals.
And we kind of got away from that, the AACP?
Well, the AACP has changed over years. We're on our third Aspen Area Community Plan and our maybe 10th comprehensive plan for the city since we started planning in the 50s and 60s. So, for instance, the 2000 AACP talked about infill and the importance of kind of reinvigorating development downtown. And so that's why we had code amendments coming out of the 2000 AACP.
Which allowed free market residential downtown.
Right. And I think taking a step back, some of those code amendments probably went too far. And you kind of saw that in the recalibration of the 2012 Aspen Area Community Plan that was a little bit more community focused, wanting to make sure that if there's development, that it is the type of development that supports Aspen's small mountain town character.
And so the council was seeing that maybe that character was starting to get lost. And so they put the brakes on development for a minute, which was in the downtown commercial core and the outlying areas of Main Street.
It's all commercial zone districts. So everything that's in a commercial zone district has had this temporary pause so that council could evaluate code changes. And at the end of the day, the code amendments that are in front of city council are significant. They result in smaller buildings, an increased focus on mobility as opposed to always parking, like single occupancy vehicles, as well as really looking at ways to encourage the types of commercial uses that we want and discourage some of the uses we don't want, like free market residential downtown.
What is in front of council tonight?
So in front of council are five ordinances, and there's some detail in there of, you know, how do you calculate buildings on a steep slope? But broadly speaking, the code amendments are about how do we reinforce the community's goals of mobility and encouraging alternative modes of transportation as opposed to the car, which is a longstanding goal that the city's had. How do we require buildings that are smaller? And so there's a downzoning that's happening in our commercial zone districts. So there's two-story buildings, 28 feet, that's it. There's also code amendments about uses and how do we encourage commercial uses that we want to see.
So let's get a little more specific on the mobility part. And I know that there's in the packet, the memo to council, there's a couple scenarios of redeveloped buildings.
What we've done is incorporated our mobility requirements with our parking requirements. So the city has both right now, and we're combining them into one system so that you can provide infrastructure and programs for the building users to enable them to more easily bike, walk there as opposed to drive.
Does that mean it's a specific type of business that's in that building that
No.
would encourage that?
It's not a specific type of business. It's creating that infrastructure that supports transit, biking, walking over the car. So in a scenario, if a property owner wanted to put on-site parking, it would also need to be available for shared parking. So other people besides those direct building users be able to use it in off periods, and you know there'd be an agreement and things like that. But really trying to open up parking, if it's created, that it is more usable for the community.
And then when you said program and commercial use, mm-hmm. can you explain that a little bit more?
Yeah, so this is kind of the conversation of commercial mix that the community has often. And what we've tried to do is create design requirements within the land use code to create spaces that are more likely to be used for locally serving businesses or locally owned businesses. So we're calling this second tier space, and that is really any space that's a basement space or a second floor space, as well as businesses that are maybe accessed off of a mid-block walkway or an alley. So ground floor space that's a little maybe harder to get to, but it's that nook and cranny. You're kind of discovering that space, and they tend to be businesses that command a lower rent, that tend to be more locally serving. And we're trying to encourage those spaces to be developed and also require that if a building has one now and is getting torn down, that it be replaced.
Okay. So you can't deed restrict. You're not going to deed restrict a building or require them to say it has to be locally served. And this is our criteria in our locally serving.
No, locally serving is tough because, while I don't shop at the first store, there are locals who shop at the first store. The Carl's Pharmacy is something that serves tourists and locals. And so it's tough to really dissect that. And so what we've tried to do is create opportunities for those businesses and really pushing in the design of buildings to have those spaces. So in addition to the second tier space, we're also looking at eliminating the ability to do new free market residential in our commercial zone districts. And that's a pretty significant policy. It's something that was one of the impetuses for the moratorium. And so that is something that is being guided by City Council. And all of these code amendments and the work that the staff has done, the work that the consultants have done, is to support council's policy goals, which really comes from the Aspen Area Community Plan. And so how can we pull all of those policies into actual on-the-ground code language?
And this is pretty significant. I mean, these are amendments that go into the land use code, and they are law until they're changed again.
Yes.
How often does the land use code get changed?
The land use code gets changed in kind of this manner. This is a significant code change, 15 to 20 years. This is a major effort. There's always kind of minor amendments where, there's maybe a way we calculate something that's a little weird, and so we want to fix that and maybe get rid of a loophole or make it clearer for people. But this level of change is really significant.
Yeah. It seems like it. So, I mean, to me, it seems like the headlines are 28 feet across the board in any commercial district.
Yep.
Requiring landlords, business, or building owners to replace that locally serving business in some way. And how do you regulate that? Like, let's say it's the Bidwell building, and you've got the nail place. And you've got Rhinos, and you have Kemosabe. Mm-hmm. So do those have to go back?
It's not the businesses, it's the space type. So in the buildings that we've seen in recent years, we see a lot of one-story buildings with a basement that's connected to that kind of prime tenant. And the idea with these amendments is that basement is separate and is not connected to that prime tenant. It cannot be used for storage. It has to be used for a business. And that's the type of space that we're trying to encourage because it tends to have more of these locally serving, locally owned businesses.
And the market will dictate the rent, and therefore it most likely will end up being a locally serving business because of what kind of square footage it can command.
Right. Okay. So the idea with the mobility piece is that there is a parking and transportation impact that development has. But in saying that you have to have the parking on site, it really restricts the usability of that space. And we have a crunch for parking spaces. And so the code amendments encourage shared parking so that it would be available to other users besides that building's tenants. So people could still have some level of requirement, but we're trying to open it up a little bit so that if you are providing on-site parking, it's available to multiple people.
Okay. Have you run this by any of the prominent landlords in town? Do they know about this?
Yeah, so we've spent the last few weeks looking at some development scenarios and have had conversations with the folks in the development community. And what we found is that some of the proposed policies have a more significant impact on development than others. So the potential affordable housing changes, where there's a change to the mitigation rate, as well as a requirement to mitigate for existing commercial space, are the most significant impacts, particularly for older buildings.
What about the affordable housing? What will be the mitigation?
So there's a discussion of charging different mitigation rates for prime space versus second tier space. And what we have found as we've run the scenarios is that in some buildings that results in actually less affordable housing mitigation. And in some scenarios it results in significantly more mitigation that's required. And so it would be a change, and it depends on the proportion of second tier space that people are proposing. The potential change is, right now we have a 60% mitigation requirement.
Yes.
Potential change would be a 40% mitigation requirement for the second tier spaces and 80% for prime. So a building right now that maybe doesn't propose a second floor at all, if they came forward and proposed a second floor, maybe a smaller building so there's less first ground floor prime space, they might have a lower mitigation rate.
Okay.
And so one of the policy questions for council tonight is, do they want to move forward with that policy or not, knowing that it kind of changes the amount of affordable housing, sometimes more, sometimes less, that we're getting from development.
Okay. And if everything goes according to plan, tonight is first reading of this?
Tonight is actually the fourth public hearing. We're not anticipating an adoption tonight. We are requesting final direction from City Council and encourage the community to come and give comments, because these are significant changes in terms of lower building height, potentially more mitigation, not allowing free market residential uses. And so getting that direction tonight, and then potential adoption on January 23rd.
And if it's adopted on January 23rd, when would the moratorium be lifted?
So the moratorium is scheduled to be lifted at the end of February, and that date, if things are adopted at the end of January, would stay in place.
Okay. So this is pretty significant now that I think about it. When did infill get passed? When did free market residential become allowable?
So free market residential was always allowed downtown, and single family homes were actually allowed downtown at that time. And so one of the really positive things, I think, out of infill was the removal of the ability to do a single-family home in the commercial core,
yeah,
and really focus on commercial uses.
That was like mid-2000s?
Early to mid-2000s. It all, everything, I think, was adopted by 2004. And then we actually had a moratorium in 2006 to pull that back a little bit. And that was done, and those code amendments went into effect in 2007. We've had about 10 years of development since then, and have, I think, seen that pullback wasn't quite enough. And so these code amendments go a little bit further. We have a high set of standards here in Aspen. We want buildings to do a lot of things, and we want them to look in a pretty specific way. And so we need code amendments that deliver that. And that's the goal of this set of code amendments, is to really deliver on what types of uses do we want. We want to see commercial uses in our commercial zone districts, and how can we support that? And so there's a lot of language that goes into doing that, but that's ultimately the goal of these code amendments. We're proposing an increase to the cash in lieu for parking to $38,000. Right now it's $30,000. We're going to $38,000.
Why?
Because the rate hasn't been adjusted in a number of years. We did an updated study and can justify going up to the $38,000. I think staff and our consultants think potentially we could go higher, but we need a more detailed study to go higher. But there are parking and transportation impacts, and so we need to make sure that that is being captured in the cash in lieu rate.
Okay. Good.
Again, it's all about development, mitigating its impacts.
So you've spent $350,000 on consultants?
About $350,000 on consultants, and that includes both local consultants as well as international consultants. Our parking consultants work nationally and internationally. They were selected really because they are on the cutting edge, on the forefront of transportation and mobility, and we really wanted to get that expertise as part of these code amendments. I would say that the parking code amendments, really all of them, but particularly the parking code amendments and the second tier commercial, these are innovative in the country. We're charting new territory here, and so there may be amendments at, you know, a year from now to make sure that we've got the right mix in the code. But it's really exciting to work with such well-known and respected consultants to be able to help push the envelope and ensure Aspen is on the cutting edge of things.
Good. Well, thanks for coming in.
Yeah, thank you.